Welcome to the From the Fairway podcast. I'm your host, Michael Kinkler, a mental performance coach that helps elite level athletes master their minds and increase performance. With me today is my co-host, one of the best golf instructors I know, my former college teammate and friend, Tony DiSilvestro. Tony, how are you?
Doing good, buddy. How are you?
Doing well.
Good, good.
Fresh off a really exciting week of golf, so I'm excited to talk that with you.
Goodness, no kidding.
Yeah.
So much going on there.
Yeah. Yeah, so much to jump into, and we're going to kind of hit all of it today and try not to ramble too much on players recap and Scotty talk because, man, that was really fun viewing on Sunday and really good viewing all week and just really just so good from Scotty right now. Every part of his game is super sharp and a lot of fun to watch. So I guess maybe kind of starting there, Tony, like, I don't know, initial reactions to the golf on Sunday, to the golf all week, what sticks out?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that sticks out for me is that Scotty didn't have his physical body in the best shape that he could. His shoulders bothering him the whole day and really the whole week, but it was evident with his swing, too. You know, he's got some interesting footwork to begin with, but if you notice later on in the third round and then into the fourth round, his front foot was slipping out, almost like he was trying to help his shoulders and hips clear through, getting past that pain a little bit. And I think that's, to me, was the biggest crazy impressive part of the whole
finish. Fighting through that.
Yeah.
It was a fluky, like, neck shoulder injury that I think he kind of described just as like a super tense muscles, like almost like a mini like pinched nerve kind of situation. But yeah, I got some treatment on the golf course actually, between holes there, from his physio. Yeah, it just makes it that much more impressive because I know he said on Saturday like there were like chips and putts he didn't feel like he could like totally move his neck like towards his target line, and he said there were a few shots where he couldn't give it a full kind of go. There on Friday and even into Saturday, and Sunday he said it felt better, but yeah, pretty impressive to fight through that and play as well as he did down the stretch.
Definitely.
Yeah, I guess 20 under for the week. I pulled some nuggets from the stat chart for Scotty, and I kind of want to run through those and get your thoughts on that because some of them are kind of bananas. Four bogeys all week. That's not very many. 22 birdies, one eagle, played his last 20 holes, 11 under par, going back to the three holes he birdied in a row to finish his round on Saturday. Bogey-free in his final round, again, just like last week. And on the week, maybe one of the most important stats I think that we threw up here, first in driving accuracy, 45 out of 56 fairways. Most weeks, driving accuracy kind of matters, but not really.
Right.
In comparison to driving distance, but like we were talking about earlier, that driving accuracy actually matters at Sawgrass.
Yeah, you see on a lot of those holes, the sloping down and away from the fairway, right? There's a lot of these trough style where there's not a bunker and a pond. And I think that's a lot of the other deal we'll get into a bit more, but looking at Rory had a phenomenal week, but couldn't keep it out of the pond.
Right.
I agree. More so than most weeks, that driving accuracy comes down to be the deciding factor.
Yeah.
And you saw it with Brian Harman, with Wyndham Clark, with Schauffele, all three of them going through the fairway on 18 with a chance to contend. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, and Scotty got up there and hit maybe not the most comfortable shot to hit, but hit the one that he needed to hit, and he executed it really well, right? And, you know, not that Brian Harman and Xander and Wyndham taking kind of the line out to the right, the more conservative play, but I was surprised that their balls rolled through that much. I know it's adrenaline. I know they're excited and amped up to hit that, but man, if you were going to take that line, you can't miss there. You know what I mean?
100%. A huge mental mistake by all three guys.
And especially with the situation, right? Like, obviously, like, they knew that they needed to birdie that last hole. I'm not saying maybe hit driver, but why not hit three wood and really roll the dice? Because I don't know, you're not really going to have a great chance if you roll through the fairway and in the pine straw, you're up to chance. Like, I don't know why they didn't just give it a roll and hit the shot that they really needed to hit coming down the stretch on 18. Wyndham did. I should give him credit because he set up and had some stones and hit the fairway, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, right? I think so.
It's just Xander and Brian that rolled.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Wyndham, heck of a putt on 18.
Oh, I don't know how that didn't go in.
I don't know.
It was a little quick, but, man, that was a vicious hole out. He double-stepped it, you know. He stepped it once, thought it was going in, and then when it horseshoed, he thought it was going in still. And
I don't know if he slept yet, but I'd be.
Yeah, that's some nightmare fuel.
Brutal.
Yeah, absolutely. And really, you know, I know last time we talked about kind of that recipe for high-level golf getting played, right? And we used Scotty as the example of, yeah, this guy chucks all the boxes, right? And obviously we saw that again this week. Super, super fun to watch. For me, you know, I think maybe some words that I use to describe just not even just Sunday performance, but all week, right, watching some of the earlier coverage was it just was so steady, clean, and control, right? Just rounds that were filled with momentum and confidence, right? And making that few of birdies just – you know, or a few of bogeys, I should say, just builds and builds that confidence throughout the weekend, right? I mean, his middle round, 69, 68, like, good rounds, but obviously scoring was pretty low at Sawgrass all week with soft greens and accessible pins and that sort of stuff. But, yeah, to really just hang around all week and then go out there, you know, two, three groups ahead of the final groups and lay it out there and say, all right, come get me.
Super impressive. And I think that some of that freedom up, right? That okay, I'm six back. You saw his caddy, Ted Scott, showing him the six when he pulled out for eagle on four, I think it is. That was what started the whole the final round for him, right? Yeah. Started out with a few pars, steady work, and then hold out for his second ever eagle at Sawgrass and off to the races, you know.
Yeah.
And he wasn't defending a lead. He wasn't in a position where it was expected for him to finish this thing off or anything like that. And I think that freed him up a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's absolutely worth mentioning, right? Being in Scotty's position is way, way easier than being where, you know, Wyndham and Xander were, right? Trying to just squeak by and not give too many strokes back where Scotty could just go out and do his thing. Yeah, absolutely. I know last time, you know, we talked in kind of our preview, we were talking about just the importance of holes 16 through 18, right? And I don't know, what stuck out from you from watching the leaders play that on Sunday?
I mean, I think that the drive on 18 all week, but the drive on 18,
yeah,
became the deciding factor. 17, we didn't see any dramatics in the guys that were at the top. Which that's not the case every time,
right?
Every year, but
17 played. I can't remember exactly historically how it ranked, but historically it played pretty easy in comparison to other years. Except the Sunday pin, they hardly made any. I think they made three birdies there, four birdies all day on the Sunday pin location,
mm-hmm.
which is not many at all.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, I don't know, the one real big shot, obviously Scotty's putt on 17 was amazing, right? That was super, super good. But the shot that really, I don't know, stands out to me as being one of the difference makers behind the tee shot on 18, right? Tee shot on 18 is like the ultimate. Like, you got to hit it here, like, mm-hmm. 1, 2, 3, go, yeah. Right? But the bunker shot on 16 for that little pot bunker.
Yeah.
Announcer said it was an easy shot. Maybe, right, in terms of lie, maybe if you take that shot out of the environment that it was in, right, if you had that shot on a Tuesday with nobody out there, yeah, probably not super hard. But with water behind and the environment and what was at stake, like, there's no way that that's an easy shot.
Yeah, my question to Scotty would be kind of off of Smiley Kaufman's call on it. Smiley was there calling it, and he said he – caught it a little heavy, and where he landed that, yeah, it had to be a dump and run situation,
right.
And that would be the question, right? Was that on purpose?
Right.
Or was that, because we say it all the time, what does winning take? your absolute best and more luck than everyone else, mm-hmm. right? So that in some fashion that may have factored in. And
yeah,
I don't know. I'd just be interested to know if he was trying to nip that one or if he was really trying to dump and run it, just get it out of the bunker, release towards the pin. I don't want to have any chance of this going long into the water.
If I had to speculate, which we can, because why not, right? I would say that was probably the play. I can't imagine. Scotty's pretty good at kind of minimizing risk and mm-hmm. playing it pretty close to the vest when he needs to, and or when he should, I should say. And I feel like that was absolutely a situation like that because, yeah, post a number, see if those boys behind you can, you know, have some stones and make a birdie coming in. And
no doubt.
Wyndham made one, but that was it. So.
And that was the craziest part to me watching it yesterday was, okay, he's put the number up, but I don't think that's going to – oh, my God, that might – oh, that's going to hold. You know, it was like that. Yeah. It was just like, oh, okay, they got four more holes. I really feel the best in the world, and they've been doing it all week. That was the
– right.
Wyndham stalled a little bit in the third round, obviously, but they were scoring there all week.
Yeah. Would you say Wyndham and Xander were trying not to lose on Sunday?
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, that's what it looked like. And I mean, Wyndham fought his butt off till the bitter end.
Right.
I'm not trying to take that from him. But, yeah, it did look definitely more conservative than just that freewheeling. And I think that is one of those unique parts. And Wyndham's a champion. He's a major champion winner. I'm not.
Right.
But that's one of those unique things that Tiger did so well that I think Scotty is kind of locking into as well as, like, yeah, it's really easy to go shoot the lights out on Thursday and Friday. Mm-hmm. But now you made the cut, and now you're trying to win a golf tournament. On Thursday and Friday, all you're doing is trying to not lose a golf tournament, right?
Yeah, you're just plotting your way around.
Right, and there's that different mindset.
Yeah. I feel like Scotty's really, really good at playing the way he does, playing loose, playing to win in those big moments, maybe better than anyone else that is doing it right now.
All right. Yeah. The proof's in the pudding.
It really is.
To win back-to-back on the PGA Tour is an impressive feat. To be the first person to ever defend the Players' Championship title on the heels of a victory the week before against the exact same guy in the exact same fashion, I mean, that's mental resiliency. That was not – it's not just, oh, my game is – just peaking so absurdly right now. That's not what anybody's been talking about with Scotty's game. Do I think this mallet putter is helping the ball go in the hole? Heck yeah. Mm-hmm. But, no, that's it was impressive to watch, most definitely.
Absolutely. It's kind of made you want to go play and practice and kind of get to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Like an idiot went out in the 40-mile-an-hour winds and 46-degree temps yesterday. And I didn't look like Scotty, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I looked a bit more like Rory.
Yeah.
When water is on the left.
We should chat Rory, I guess, maybe a touch here. Because we talked a little bit about him last time. Rory made, like, 27-some birdies. I don't know if I wrote down how many bogeys he made, but it was a substantial amount of bogeys this week.
And three doubles, I think?
Yeah, I think it was three doubles and like 11 bogeys, maybe, if that.
I think that adds up pretty spot on.
Yeah. Yeah, and just lots of mistakes. And I know you mentioned, I watched a little bit of his early rounds, but I didn't watch it like super, super close. But you said he had kind of the left miss going on a few holes and rinsing a few balls again like he did last week.
Yeah, and on 18, he wasn't in the right pine straw, I'll tell you that. He wasn't in the middle of the fairway either. So, yeah, there's obviously a mental block in there. The guy's golf swing is so good.
It is.
Something with his hands at impact is happening to shut the club face more than he's anticipating, right?
Yeah.
And what I see as a golf coach is oh man, I don't want that club face to be too far open right, mm-hmm. where he just pushes one. But he also knows it needs to be open to the right to hit a true draw.
Yeah.
And it's the fear of the right, I think, in my opinion, not the fear of the left, that's causing this double cross.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
I mean, anytime you have such a big discrepancy at birdies, bogeys, he was second in the field in terms of total birdies this week at 27. Don't ask me who was first. I didn't look. But 27 birdies, which was second essentially for the week, the whole field, but 11 bogeys. Like, that's a huge swing of, like, it's either there or it's not, right? And in terms of consistency and confidence and being comfortable and knowing what's coming, it's not there, and that's got to be a little bit frightening.
Yep, exactly right, and that's what allows you to pull the trigger freely.
Anything positive that you feel like Rory can take away from this week, though?
He's still Rory McIlroy. He's
still
incredibly good. It looked like he really enjoyed himself this week.
Yeah, it did. And he came out firing on Thursday and Friday. He made a crap ton of birdies that first round.
Oh, yeah.
So,
and he didn't play poorly.
Yeah.
He made 6 or 8 really bad driver swings.
Right. And around Sawgrass with the rough like that, you kind of get handcuffed.
Yep.
You
know? You
can't really take on too much when you're hitting from the rough all the time.
Agreed.
Yeah. Any other Rory thoughts? Honestly, kind of a similar performance to the last week at Bay Hill. A lot of birdies, a lot of mistakes. It's just kind of ho-hum.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. I don't think it's a step forward, but I don't necessarily think it's a step back. So.
No, I mean, yeah. The fact that he had 27 birdies has to be a positive.
Yeah, that's got to make you feel good, at least if you're in his camp.
And this is what I talk about with my students a lot, too, is, okay, let's look at the 11 bogeys and 3 doubles as a positive now that it's past us. Of course, it affected the score negatively, but, okay, that's a lot of room for improvement. Let's go look at those holes.
Right.
Let's figure out why the heck we did that, you know? And then if we can clean those up, my God, we almost led the field in birdies.
I think he finished 11 shots back from Scotty. I think he finished at 9 under.
I believe that's correct.
So, I mean, shoot, you take a double or two out of there and cut the bogeys in half, and you're right there coming down the stretch on Sunday.
Right. So, right.
Could have, should have, would have, you know. You could talk about that all the time, but I definitely think there's some positives for Rory to take away, but we'll see how we – I'm just curious on the left misses, because thinking about Augusta, and that's just
– And I'm not sure if he's in the field this week, but they're going to one of the hardest –
Yeah,
courses on the tour.
Yeah.
Scoring average out there is,
yeah.
I don't think it'll be as low as this week. That's for sure.
Yeah.
But who knows, man? If the conditions are soft for these guys, they just throw absolute darts.
Yeah, they do. They do, absolutely. I've never really seen such big ball marks and pitch marks at Sawgrass. It's been a few years since we've seen that.
Yeah.
Usually it's pretty crusty and quick and firm and fast. And they said they had a whole bunch of rain this year, so and the weeks leading up to it, so couldn't really. Obviously had some nice thick rough, but couldn't really get it super firm like years previous.
Yeah.
So. You know, Scotty had – I listened to his post-round presser, and man, those guys, after they win, they have so many media obligations. It's got to be absolutely exhausting.
You know? Oh, yeah.
He went straight from the media room to the Golf Channel set for Live From. I'm sure he signed a stack of 150 flags, you know, and all the pictures and all that sort of stuff. And woe is me that they have to do that. But can you imagine having them stick around 2-3 hours after you went through that? And
you know what? I don't recall Tiger having to stick around for a Golf Channel set back in the day.
Yeah. You're right. I feel like the jet
was fueled up pretty quick. But yeah. I think that, like you said, is part of it, comes with it.
Right.
Or how are we going to get these purses bigger?
Yeah.
How are we going to bring more eyes to golf? Well, we're going to give more information. Right.
Yeah. No, it was all good. I mean, it's fun to watch. The access as a fan, right, is cool because you get to sit there and listen and kind of understand a little bit more about him and how his kind of mind works and whatnot. But what I'm getting at is he had a really interesting thought, you know, and they were kind of asking about, you know, just the challenge of winning on consecutive weeks, not to mention the scale of the Players' Championship, right, as being almost a fifth major, right? But Scottie said, you know, mentally and physically, yeah, it's exhausting, right? But he said the most fun that you could have on the golf course is being in contention, right? And that stuck. That quote really stuck with me, thinking about the role that I have with athletes and helping them perform their best in those super, super big moments, right? And I know for me, loving competition wasn't necessarily a thing that I had right out of the gates. For me, it was absolutely something I kind of learned to enjoy and love more now so than I used to as a younger player. And I just kind of wanted to pick your brain and get a dialogue going on kind of your evolution of the love for competition and being in contention and playing under pressure, and how it's evolved in your game over the years.
Well, I think the only way to explain how competitive I am in everything that I do starts with a story for me in preschool. We were playing musical chairs one day, and it got down to me and one other person, and I end up losing, taking second place. And immediately ran to like this really short, big round table in the corner of the daycare. And they ended up having to call my parents because they couldn't get me to come out from under this table. And I was just screaming. I was absolutely detesting losing. That for me, that's always been that way.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what I'm doing. You may not even know it, but if we leave your house and we're going to get Mexican food, we're in a race to the restaurant, you know.
Yeah.
So for me with golf, it was different though, because golf is so exposing and you think so much that everyone else is paying attention to what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, I truly got most competitive when I realized that wasn't the case. But prior to that, you saw me in practice.
Sure.
Nobody was safe, even if they were probably going to beat me.
Yeah.
I was coming at you, and I loved to talk about it. So I don't know. I think just being fiercely competitive, I remember playing baseball and screaming at a kid that started crying because he had a ball go between his legs when he was playing shortstop, and I was on the mound, right? I ran over to him, and I'm yelling at him like, my dad had to come rip me off the guy, you know, like that.
Yeah. So for you, was it loving winning, hating losing, or just liking the feeling of being competitive? I feel like that's a.
It's definitely the third.
Okay.
For me, oh my gosh, like I'm getting excited just sitting here thinking about it. I can feel my blood getting warm. Like, it just courses that feeling of getting locked in.
Yeah.
I can do it standing in the golf shop when we got a big tournament going, and we are all just locked in and excited for this thing to be as successful and smooth as we've prepared it to be.
Yeah.
Like, I can get that same adrenaline rush, that same want,
right,
to be great, to be successful.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and to be honest, it's a conversation I have a lot with my athletes, especially my athletes that struggle to perform well when it really, really matters, right? For me, I think when I finally realized that you don't just have to love winning, you don't have to just hate losing, you can be in that middle ground of what we just talked about, if like you just enjoy being in the moment and competing and maybe even being vulnerable, maybe putting yourself out there where, yeah, like you could fail, you could look bad, you could lose, right? I don't think it was until I realized that I could reside kind of in that middle ground to where I could actually play well and pressure and actually kind of enjoy playing tournament golf, because tournament golf and casual golf obviously are two different beasts. Yeah.
I couldn't agree more with you, right? Like, and that was, I don't know that I ever fully got myself to a level where I could lock in. Even tournaments that I played best, that when I won our home invitational, that was such a flow state. It's so different, I guess, competitive golf versus just competition.
Sure.
You go play pickup basketball, I can get locked in and get that same rush.
Yeah.
We're at practice, and I look at Jacob Baird, and I say, you're it. You're losing today.
Mm-hmm.
I can lock in, right? But when you got to go tee it up with four guys that you don't know.
Yeah.
For me, it was hard. It was quickly like, oh, are they judging me? I got something I got to prove to them.
Mm-hmm.
But once I was able, like you said, to realize, no, it's not. I don't have to prove anything to anybody. I just need to remember how to get excited about trying to beat these three guys in my group.
Yeah.
And I think that's something Coach Smith always said well. Win your group, we'll win the thing, right?
Sure, yeah. And I know it's weird for me, but I don't know. And I guess reflecting back, it's like, I don't know. I never really wanted to beat other people. And maybe this sounds bad, but like it was always just about the competition with myself and like trying to play the best golf that I could play.
And that's where you're so much more mentally sound than me.
Yeah, but I don't know. I feel like, I don't know, you could argue that both sides, because I feel like you and I are opposite in that regard, right? We both like competing, but I think we both like competing for different reasons.
Mm-hmm, most
Not
definitely.
That you don't want to compete with yourself and better yourself, but I feel like for you it's definitely more personal and you just want to beat
up. Oh, and that's when I get the best out of myself.
Yeah.
When I start to try and beat myself, I'm very critical of myself.
Sure.
And that's when things don't work for me.
Yeah, so when you are able to kind of make it external about how you stack up with other people and not just yourself, you feel like you perform at a higher level.
You know this about me.
Yeah.
I love ping pong.
Right.
And I have no formal training in ping pong. I just had two older sisters and a ping pong table that I could tilt upward to act like I had friends, you know?
Right.
But I think that's why I feel like I can beat anybody at ping pong. I don't have anything to be critical of.
Sure.
It's been a lifetime figuring out how to make my golf swing better.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to spend a lifetime helping others make theirs better. And so it's like the knowledge that I have about the golf swing, it's so easy for me to get critical.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that you've helped me a lot with, which is the ball's here, it's going there.
Sure.
That's going to happen. And allow that to be my train of thought. And from a competitive standpoint, I do the same thing. It's like there's one shot at a time. You know, play the ball at your feet.
Yeah.
If you're walking between shots, you're playing the rest of your round in your head because it's not there.
Yeah. So kind of for this next part and the way that my brain's working, right, is saying, hey, you and I both love competition. We love it for different reasons, right? And that's neither right or wrong. That's pretty indifferent, right? But I think we both can agree that loving competition is absolutely what you need to perform at your best, right? I don't think you can go out and play the final round with the Players if you don't truly enjoy being in that arena.
Right? Yeah, 100%. And I think that I was telling you this earlier. Nothing against Scottie Scheffler. Sometimes I'm like, man, I want somebody else to win. And I think the reason I feel that way is because he does it in such an even-keel manner.
Yeah.
Why is Tyrrell Hatton one of my favorite golfers? Because I love to watch the dramatics. I do. I'm that type of person.
Yeah.
But I think that's, to your point, what makes him so freakishly good is, like, he has a way of being even keel. But he wouldn't have just given us that beautiful quote you read us earlier.
Sure.
About being mentally and physically exhausted but loving to be in the competition. He didn't just read that in a book on his flight out to Florida, you know.
Yeah, that's real life experience.
That just runs through his veins.
Yeah. So my question kind of for you on this is like, all right, we know that loving competition is important to performance, right? But why? Like, what is loving, and you're kind of the way that you wrap your head around it, loving competition, how does it actually help performance?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's the grit, right? It shows you. Winning feels great, but it's fleeting.
Mm-hmm.
You don't get that rush once you've won, right?
Right.
You might get a little high from it for a day or so, but the competitor in you is like, okay, then back to the grindstone, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's what, to his point, of loving being in the moment, loving being in the competition. That's what the best at any craft are addicted to.
Yeah.
Kobe Bean Bryant comes to mind mm-hmm. when I think of who's the guy that was in the gym at 2 in the morning every single day when everybody else was at the club.
Right.
Kobe. Because yeah. he didn't get the itch, his drug, his addiction at a club. Mm-hmm. He didn't get it 30 minutes after a win. He got it when he was grinding, when he was sharpening his axe, you know?
Mm-hmm. And for me, kind of what that equates to, right, is this idea that loving competition is what motivates athletes to chase mastery rather than results and outcomes, right? What you just said, right? Kobe, sure, he wants to win championships. Absolutely, he wants to beat other people, right? But for him and for so many of the world's best athletes through the years, right, it's about mastering their craft, and that's what they love, right? The, mastering that and feeling that, seeing their skills come out in those moments and seeing that mastery that they've practiced for, you know, endless hours in the gym come out to play when it actually matters.
Yeah. It, yeah. Just to touch on that too, it's been interesting in my life and career to see how that's transitioned. I don't have this just constant need to better my golf game anymore, but I did for so long, and that was my driving force for everything. That yeah. was my life. I definitely have the same feeling now with instruction and my students. Mm-hmm. It's so weird to me. Like, people would constantly be like, what are you thinking? Oh, just my golf swing. Like, I'd just be daydreaming or just
yeah.
looking off. Because in my head, I'm so focused on visually seeing myself doing something.
Right.
But now I'll be, like, driving down the street, and it's like, oh, yeah. You know, Hunter may have he might have needed this man, I can't wait to see him in a week because I can – we can talk about that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. But it's to that same mastery point, right?
Mm-hmm.
The greatest of anything. It could be the greatest grocery bagger in the world.
Right.
That guy gets excited mm-hmm. to get to work at getting better and being faster.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. What else comes to mind for me, right, in terms of loving competition and its influence on performance, right, is it – it helps athletes frame pressure, right, and frame nerves and stress, and helps them look at those things as being helpful and facilitative to their performance, right? Pressure and stress are things that can be very, very helpful to athletes, right? What has to happen, though, is that athlete has to be able to look at those things and go, yeah, that's not something that scares me. That's something I enjoy, right? Those are good feelings. Those are feelings that are going to lock me in and help me perform my best. Also with that and with this whole thing, I think what's most important is it loving competition and loving that feeling of being right in the thick of it, win, lose, or draw, right, helps contribute to a growth mindset, right? And this idea that losing, failing, falling on your face, making double on 18, right, is something not to be afraid of, but something that you can learn from and part of the mastery process. And this idea of everything's a learning opportunity, right, and not being afraid of, yeah, quite honestly, just falling flat on your face.
Yeah, and we've talked a lot about how good Scottie Scheffler is at signing a scorecard and going about being Scottie Scheffler, not Scottie Scheffler the golfer.
Right.
But I think that that mentality completely ties into his statement again.
Mm-hmm.
He loves being in that competition. He loves being in the heat of that, and it – I obviously haven't gotten to ask him myself, but if I had to guess, that's his family crest too. You know, he wears that as a badge of honor.
Yeah.
Hey, did you see what I did this past weekend? Just because he can let Scottie Scheffler, the golfer, be on the golf course doesn't mean when he leaves the golf course he doesn't have pride in
sure.
what he did right then. Right.
Right. Right. Absolutely. So what I'm curious to kind of hear from you, and obviously, like, I have kind of my own approach on this. In the work that I do with my younger athletes, right, is how do we help young athletes, young golfers, learn to love competition? Because it's a hard thing to learn to love it. It's hard, it's scary, it's uncomfortable. So how do you go about that with some of the golfers that you work with?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest things for me from a coach's standpoint is that I try to double down when it's good
mm-hmm.
and when it's bad. Be very aware of that. Like,
hey man, we're here. This is the ebb of our flow, right? This is not, we're a wave. We're not,
right.
It's not this climb nothing, the mountaintop kind of linear. Deal. Right.
Yeah.
And if I can get them to say, to acknowledge the pain of failure, mm-hmm. then you can move past it. But then you can use it as fuel, right?
Yeah.
But more so, what do you do with guys that are winning? Because if all you've ever done is win, the one time you get derailed,
right?
Kind of watched it with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas a little bit.
Sure.
What do you go to? And when it's good, you got to double down. And it goes back to winning's fleeting.
Yeah.
Man, that felt great, but is this the end of your life? Are you only going to be defined by that one win? Or are you going to get back to it and do it again and do it 10 times and do it 50 times? And if we're going to do that, what's that look like? Yeah. Right? And how do you put a framework together with that?
Yeah, and I see, I don't know, this sword kind of cuts both ways. But I see a lot of athletes' failure, right? They refuse to kind of look at it and understand it, right? Bad performances, essentially, they crumple up and throw away in the bin, right? Good performances, sometimes they reflect more over, they think about more, right? Because it feels good to think about when you performed well, right? And what I try to challenge athletes with is like, all right, like, cool, you played awful, like, you really struggled, like, let's not wallow in this, right? But let's really understand it, right? And gain all the learning and experience that we can from it instead of just going, oh, yeah, that was bad performance, let's crumple that up, throw it away, and move on, right?
Yes. Yeah.
I think that's something younger athletes sometimes struggle to do is learn from those failures and those bad experiences. What do you feel like parents can do?
You know, for me, this goes back to one of my idols and a quote that he had from his father. Jim Valvano talks a lot about the support he had from his parents, but his dad always would say when he was asking him about making the NCAA tournament and winning it and how crazy hard a goal that is, and but I'll keep trying. He'd always say, son, my bags are packed. Mm-hmm. And he had a suitcase that he kept with clothes packed all the time sitting in his room. He'd say, son, my bags are packed for you. You're going to make it. I know you will. Right? And having that unbreakable belief in your kids. You got to be real with them.
Sure.
But if at home they can't reach the moon, then you've set a ceiling, you know? And I think that's one of the most important things. Be a parent. You want to play in the NBA? I know you can. I know you'll do it. Let the coaches coach, and yeah. You be a parent.
Right. Yeah, that's well said. That's well said. And, you know, you and I both somewhat interact with parents. You probably more so than I do, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, parents can – I think we've seen it all. We've seen both sides of the coin. We've seen some really parents that have been super supportive and very much facilitative in their efforts and the way that they show up, essentially, mm-hmm. right? And we've seen some parents that really are kind of taking away from what their athlete is trying to do.
Right, and it's not for lack of want for your child.
Right, it comes from the best place.
It's almost too much want, right?
Yes.
And I think that's, again, that's – you're going to do it, son. I know you will.
Mm-hmm.
I have faith that you will do whatever you put your heart to. And also, hey, let's not forget, give them the tools that they need.
Right.
Be willing to provide them with what it is that they're going to need to succeed.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. And I think for me, kind of helping young athletes on that journey of learning to love competition, for me, it starts with something as simple as like, all right, like point blank, like what do you love about competition, right? And when I've asked athletes that, it's kind of shocking that very rarely do I get a very complete answer, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, I don't know, I like winning or I like beating other people, right? And it's never about like, I don't know, I love that feeling of like tie game, bottom of the ninth, like I'm up to bat, like I love that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite the journey to move athletes towards that. Right. And some athletes, it takes a long time. Some athletes, really, truly struggle to ever get there. But for me, I think just asking that question and seeing what that question elicits from them gives you kind of where you're starting with that athlete.
Most definitely. And from a instructional swing coach standpoint, but also a course management standpoint too.
Yeah.
It goes back to what you've taught me to do so well is be present.
Sure. Yeah.
If you can be present at your practice, if you can be present at your lesson, if you can be present in your tournament prep,
yeah.
You can be present when you step on that first tee.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot easier for you to lock in for the right reasons.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? And that kind of sparks it. It's like I feel like my athletes, they love the after feeling of competition when it goes their way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that and they don't necessarily see a difference between, "Oh, I love the result of competition when it goes my way." Mm-hmm. Right? They don't see that as being different from "I love competition in the moment." Right? They have that they're not loving it in the present moment. They're loving the result of it.
And I think for me too, one of the ways, you know, the feeling when you're playing well and you're going, "Oh my God, it's already 15.
Yeah.
We've only got 3 more holes left." Mm-hmm. That's that feeling that everybody's had.
Yeah.
Especially for juniors, that makes it a lot easier, at least for what I do to help them understand, like, "Hey, that's what I need you to feel."
Yeah.
Not just that you beat your dad one time. We're not trying to harness that moment. That moment's fleeting. It's gone.
Sure.
But what we can try and do every time is get to that headspace and that flow.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's when you get athletes kind of in that spot, man, yeah, things kind of click, right? And they become kind of killers when it really matters.
Right. And you do see that from all the greatest athletes in the world. They talk about how much. And it's easy to say, like, "Oh, yeah, you remember sitting on the basketball court or out back shooting hoops. Game's on the line.
Right.
Second of 2 free throws." And then you'd miss it 5 times, but, "Oh, something else can't." You can do that in golf. You can get ready for one putt. But that's not what – you have to do so – you have to hit it 190 plus 200 times.
Yeah.
Correctly before that one can even matter.
Right.
And that's the core of competitive golf.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think if I had to sum it up and give my one thing, right, that helps young golfers kind of and athletes just in general kind of learn to love competition is to, I don't know, in the moment, be able to be aware of what's going on in the world around you, right? That's present moment awareness, right? But even more so, more important is being not okay with failing, not okay with losing, but be willing to fail and lose. And that's a very muddy thing, a muddy statement that you'd have to pick and uncover, right? But there's a difference between being okay with losing and being willing to fail and fall on your face.
Yeah, that's the core of a golf lesson.
Yeah.
"Hey, we're going to hit some bad ones, and I can't have you react to the golf shot."
Right.
"I need you to trust me that the club is moving the right way, or your wrist is doing the right thing, or your hips are, whatever it may be, and I need you to trust that you felt something different," right?
Yeah.
And that is failure.
Right.
We're going to fit.
Yeah.
We failed to hit a good golf shot, but that's not what we're here to do anyway. Mm-hmm. We're here to fix the golf swing so that you can have more consistency when you go to make golf shots.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
But until you can learn to love the potential for falling short and failing, you're never going to play your best when it matters the most.
Yeah.
Feet are firmly planted in that camp.
Yeah, you may win a million times, sure, but until you've got that, it's blind.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Each one's going to be different. There's not going to be a pattern that you can look back and go, "This is why it happened."
Yeah. And I can't speak for Scotty. I can't speak for any of the other guys, but from what I see and what I hear, right, Scotty absolutely loves competition and being in the moment and being in contention and putting himself in a chance to fail, maybe more than anyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more.
Cool. Anything else, Tony, on players recap, on Scotty, on loving competition?
Great win, Scotty.
Absolutely.
Hell of a week. Hell of a week. Fun to watch.
Yeah.
Lucas Glover let me down. I want to throw that in there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But that's okay.
Shane had a good final round. I think he vaulted up the leaderboard a little bit.
Brian Harmon, I didn't have him picked, but, man, I thought he was going to win that thing going into Sunday. I did.
Yeah.
He looked good.
JT let me down.
Yeah, missed cut. Yikes.
Yeah, struggling with putter.
Yeah. Struggling with a lot.
Yeah.
He doesn't even look comfortable when he's walking down the fairway. He's fidgeting his body so much. Seriously.
Yeah. But absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's all I got, buddy.
Awesome. Well, listeners, thanks for joining us. We look forward to bringing you some engaging conversations, really about anything and everything under the sun with golf and performance all year long. Masters is right around the corner.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. Crazy. Once they start, they don't stop. It's bang, 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 yeah.
Every month there's a major through the summer. So look forward to diving into that, talking a little Masters and anything else that pops up. So, but until next time, cheers.
Cheers. Here's to hoping for a little lower scoring average this week. Bazinga.